Hey, what's going on, everybody? My name is Elliot Towsley, and this is the Business of Music podcast. Thank you for joining us. My business partner, James Landry, and I go back and forth about how we can help independent artists market their own music. Today, we're going to talk about LLCs, how to write off expenses, and what are the best ways to grab the attention from the Spotify algorithm. If you have more questions, follow us on Instagram or come to denovoagency.com and we'll be happy to help. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Business of Music podcast. My name is Elliot Towsley. I'm here with my business partner, James Landry. James, what's up, man?
What's going on? The camera switched there. You pointed the wrong way.
There we go. Well, that's right. There we go. He's over here this time. So James is an attorney. And I am and was a musician. And the way James and I met is he and I went to the same college. We both went to the University of New Hampshire. And I'm old and graduated in 2014. And James and I knew each other from school. He went off to law school after we graduated. And he went to Florida State to become an attorney. When he graduated law school, he got barred, and then he was like, well, I want to be an agent. I want to be a manager. Who do I know that might be able to be like my case study that I can prove I know what I'm talking about? And he came back up to New Hampshire where I was, and I was still in a band, and he knew that I was in a band because we went to school together. And then he asked if we were interested in having like a manager or attorney, and we had a lot of people ask us if we were looking for managers in the past, but James did a lot of cool things to make us realize like the business end of things, like completely outside of making the music itself. And I wonder if James, you can dive into some of those things, any of the things in particular that you remember that, because you must have been kind of like figuring out how you're going to like gauge a client's reaction. So like, what are things that stuck out to you where you're like, ooh, okay, I have something here. They didn't think of that.
I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me was when I mentioned forming an LLC for you guys and making sure you realized that you could write off a lot of the investments you're making into your music, say the beats, the traveling, the studio time, and get some tax money back for that based off of your income, because you were making money and you were paying taxes on that money. But if you can recoup and write off some of those expenses, suddenly your taxes go down and you can make more money.
Yep. I remember that being a big thing, because I don't remember what time of year it was or whatever we were doing it, but we had been recording and spending a lot of our own money on music stuff for 2 years. So like I was hands-on with the taxes and like trying, or I thought I was, with like the expenses and kind of like that kind of stuff. So like I knew, like year one, I made, I think it was like 55 or 60K at the most. And then like, I didn't know what I could write off on my business, but I was going to the studio all the time. I was doing music videos. I was buying beats. I was, you know, buying mixing time and everything. Year two, we set up the LLC. I'm still making 50 at Liberty Mutual at the IT bullshit job. We're spending about the same amount of money that we did the year before, because a lot of it was just like creating the music. We weren't necessarily promoting a ton of it. It was like creating it. And then when we knew how to set up the LLC correctly, we knew how to track and write off our expenses the right way, my tax return went from like $2,500 to $7,500 or something like that. So it's not like a dollar for dollar reimbursement. And a lot of people get that confused. And I think a lot of people think that, oh, I can write this off. That means if it costs me $100, I get $100 back at tax time. And obviously that's not quite how it works, but just the difference in spending about the same amount of money from year one to year two, I got $5,000 extra dollars in my tax return. And that's not because I spent any more. I maybe spent a little bit more, but the difference is I knew how to track it, and I knew what category and which bucket I could put particular expenses in. And a lot of those wouldn't have been able to have been done without having the LLC separated from like my personal stuff.
And we took that tax return, went to LA and made a music video.
That's right. Yeah. That's funny. Yes, we did. And yeah, we did. And we went to, we did a funny music video. And this is when I was in the group called Jig and Funk. And we had a song called Feel So Good. And we came up with this idea for a video where we were going to make it look like we went up and asked, like, you know, 50 girls or something to be in our music video, and all of them would reject us. And it was really funny because a lot of people did reject us, but then we were like, hey, can we put you in the video? Because that's exactly what we wanted. And then they were like, yeah, whatever. And it all worked out. So if you get the chance, go check it out. It's called Feel So Good by Jig and Funk if you want to kill 5 minutes of time.
A few thousand people wanted to kill time on that. Did anything with it. It was good.
Yep. It was good. And it was good for, we were planning on being in Los Angeles, but we were not planning on putting together a music video. And we were like, wait a minute, who do we know in LA that might be able to do this video? And turns out this guy happened to be in town, and we got together like the next day, and we're like, we have no idea what we want to do. Let's just wing it. And we winged it, whatever. And it actually turned out pretty good. But here we go. We got a great question. Guys, for those of you who don't know, this is the Business of Music podcast. This is a live webinar you're watching right now, but we encourage you to ask us questions on Facebook, YouTube, so that we can answer them. James and I wing this every week, and we have no idea where the conversation's going to go. But here's a great question from Joe. He says, is there a list of expenses you're able to write off somewhere?
Not specifically. The best way to do it is just get an accountant. A good accountant will pay for themselves and protect you in the long run. You're always better off just letting someone else do it. Let them use their license, put it on them to protect you. They'll save you more money. It's going to be worth every penny. As Elliot, I'll let Elliot say his little thing about hit the tax code and how it's used.
Oh yeah. So the thing I learned about the American tax code, the best way somebody put it to me, or the way that somebody put it to me that resonated the most, is this. The American tax code is 30,000 pages-ish. In that 30,000 pages, something like 30 pages tell you what, where, and how you have to pay your taxes and what you need to pay them on. That means that 29,930 pages of that tax code tell you how not to have to pay the full amount. And it's all illegal. So that's not something that, like, I've had to like explain to my parents, that these are the rules. Like, it's written this way. And it can feel kind of weird, because you can be like, wait, I can write this off driving to the show for 2 hours. It was 200 miles. I can write that off and get $100 for it. Seems weird, but the tax code wants to encourage people to do their own business. They want to encourage people to go travel and play a show and buy beers and dinners at that town and get a hotel room and then write it off. They want, that's their way of encouraging business. So, and having the data available so that you know, hey, what am I spending my thing, like QuickBooks for like $40 a year, you can track all your financial shit. It's a great tool. And then what you can do is, once you've organized those buckets of expenses, you can go to an accountant and say, look, I've got all this information here. And all they're going to do is help you shuffle which numbers go into which buckets and help you get to your financial goals. And, you know, all, so, like, to be totally transparent, we are not tax professionals. This is just like a tip of generally how you can use an LLC and generally how an accountant can help you. But definitely look into it. A good accountant who's like a young buck looking to make a name for themselves will probably do your taxes for like $1,000 or less. Probably way less. Probably like $400 or $500.
Yeah.
Here's a great James question. And anyone who doesn't know, James is an attorney. So if you have specific law questions, here's a free chance with an attorney. And I keep this way, free chance with an attorney. This is a James question right here. J-Lo says, so the LLC is going to be under our artist name or an independent label you've made?
So it doesn't matter. An LLC is a separate entity from you. The government gives it its own social security number. It's called an EIN number, and it keeps everything separate. The name of it can be anything you want it to be named. Now, when you make it separate, it can be a label. And if that LLC is a label, you as an artist will also want your own LLC to keep yourself separate from the label. But that's something that we're happy to talk more about. Happy I can get deep into it depending on what you're at, because you're going to need different contracts if you have an LLC for your label and if you have an LLC for your artist. There's really no need to have a label in a lot of cases. You can just have an LLC for your artist, and it can be the artist's name. It can be 123 Mickey. Doesn't matter. It just has to be a separate entity. It has a separate bank account, and that LLC will protect you, the money you make as a artist. So if you get sued as an artist for sampling something and it's under the LLC, they can sue the LLC. They're not going to sue you personally. They might try, but they won't win if everything's separate. And that protects things like your personal house, your personal phone, different things like that. So it's vital to get it set up the correct way, because if it's not set up the correct way, it's not going to help at all. But once it's set up the correct way, it will help you with that type of protection, and it will help you when it comes to tax time.
Yep. Great explanation. James made a few great points. An LLC is essentially a social security number for your business. What it does is it creates an identity for your business, so that if you operating under your business hypothetically back into somebody's car and they want to sue you, well, if your business is only worth $1, then they can't sue you personally and come after you and your personal assets. In a very macro explanation.
If it's set up correctly.
If it's set up correctly.
And that's part of your business. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, it's relatively inexpensive to go set up an LLC depending on the state you're in. And it's not very complicated. You can do it on the Secretary of State website for your state. Every state has a Secretary of State website that you can use to get business licenses like an LLC.
Some of them Secretary of State, others are different. Like Florida is called sunbiz.org. Everyone's different, but yes.
Yep. So there's a lot of other, like, what are some other things LLCs will do?
Other things? Depends how you sell it up and what you want to do with it. I know of people who make LLCs to buy houses so that the house is in the LLC name instead of their own name. If you have an LLC and you have an attorney make it, they can put the LLC in their own name and keep you private, so then no one knows who owns it. Some people will form an LLC to open a trust and then win the lottery. If you win the lottery or scratch ticket and you put it in the trust, then your name doesn't become public, depending on the state. Some states allow for that. Like New Hampshire, you don't have to disclose who you are. It can be a trust that discloses it. Now you can protect yourself from all your unknown relatives asking you for money. Same type of thing. That's what music's doing. It's keeping your music separate from your personal life. And when comes time, you're going to want the LLC when you're signing a deal, because you want to sign under the LLC. They're going to make you sign a side artist agreement and personally guarantee it, just like a bank would. But it's important to have the LLC because it shows that you are a professional. You are prepared. You know what you're doing. And it's going to put you at a different level when you start. It's all about appearance when you go into these labels. And if you go to a label and they think they can take advantage of you, they will.
Yep. That's a great point. Yeah. And showing that you've put in enough of the research to generally know what the best way to set up your business is, they're going to see that you're not some Joe Schmo off the street. Like, you have some inkling on how to set up the foundation to not only your music, but your business. I know music in particular is a interesting industry where, if you think about it, most business partnerships or investments, most businesses might not even consider an investment with someone unless they had all of these things buttoned up. But music is a thing where the talent, like, you know, it's almost like the NBA. The NBA doesn't care if you know, the best way to protect your or write off your taxes. They want you to go out and play basketball. But the more you know how to do it for yourself and essentially protect yourself, the more you can negotiate and know when you're getting screwed. Here's a great, another good question. How do you connect your artist name to your LLC, or do you need to?
So you could make the LLC and you could have the LLC own your artist name if you trademarked your artist name. Connecting your artist name, you're not connecting it. The LLC owns your artist name, or you're operating your artist under the LLC. As long as you keep those activities separate, it's connected. So don't go buying breakfast on a Monday on your way to work when your full-time job is not music, because that won't be under the LLC. Your artist name is just part of your LLC because that is the activity. When you're doing the activity, that's the name you go by. You don't have to connect the name. I'd say the biggest connection you may ever have is if the LLC trademarks that name for you.
Yeah. So I think,
if I'm understanding the correction.
Yeah, I think so. Like what James was saying earlier is the LLC could be like your artist name doesn't need to necessarily be directly connected in terms of filing a form or paperwork. Like you could be your artist name and the LLC could be Bippity Boppity 123Z Mars. It really doesn't matter. It could be Joe Smith 01. It doesn't necessarily have to do anything with your business. If I'm selling beer, like my LLC could be Water Slide Co. If I really want it, like it doesn't have to be connected. It's a little bit different than like a trademark, like James was saying. But in terms of like a direct connection, you could be Bippity Boppity 001 LLC and it would be the same because it's you. You are your artist name. It's still your business. Doesn't matter what in terms of filing it, what you call it.
The government doesn't care what your artist name is, ultimately. It's the government cares about the activities that are underneath that LLC, what you're doing under the LLC. Doesn't matter what you go by when you do it or anything like that. It's just the LLC is an entity, and within that entity, what are you doing?
Yep. Here's a great question, actually. This is from Joe. If I have an LLC for my recording, if I have an LLC for my recording studio, do I need to start or open another LLC for me as an artist? And if so, then I need a separate bank account also, correct?
Yes. Your recording studio is an entity, and that is the entity's business, recording studio. Your LLC as an artist is to make music. Those are separate studio. The studio makes money one way. You as an artist makes money another way. Those should be separate entities. If you combine them, you could, but you need a good accountant and you need to be prepared that if your studio goes bankrupt, they're going to come after your artist money as well. If they're too connected, intertwined at all, like if they have the same bank account, they can come back after everything on you. And you want to remain separate as much as you can, but that also means keeping the money separate. So if you're studio and you're making money on the recording studio, you have to pay taxes on that before you go and pay for your own stuff as an artist on a separate LLC, unless the recording studio owns you as an artist. But that is definitely stuff you want to talk to about with an accountant. But as a lawyer, yes, you want them completely separate.
Yep. And one of the things an accountant could let you in on is if it would make sense for you to essentially have two LLCs and your record company charges your artist company studio time. That might be beneficial. I don't know. I'm not a tax professional, but my guess is it might be minimal. But things like that are things that you can start to explore when you get these LLCs and you get a tax professional who knows what buckets to put what numbers in. And okay, we got some good questions coming in. Guys, if you're listening, throw your questions in the comments. We can see them all here. and we're excited to answer them. Here's a good question from Ross. He says, hey guys, do you help pitch talent to labels after successful Spotify campaigns or play a hand in deals? I'll go first on this one. So this is a great question. So our program works in essentially three different ways for this kind of question you have. So first, we have an audience that will inherently create data for you. And over time, what that data will turn into is metrics and leverage. So if over the course of a few promotions, we find generally which song of yours is the one that's most marketable and to whom it's most marketable to, over time, we get this data. We help you acquire the data. Then two, we help you take that data and build leverage with it. What does leverage mean? If you're going to a record label or a big publisher or a big venue purely on talent alone, then the people on the other end of that deal are essentially going to give you a take it or leave it kind of deal because you have no leverage and no leverage means no options. And what the data can do is can help you create leverage to show a potential investor, regardless of who it is, that this audience here is what they're investing in. And here are the 23 songs I have in my back pocket that haven't come out yet. I'm investing in the audience and your material that I can then sell to the audience. The third part is after we help you build this leverage and once we help you get the leverage and we can help you get to the negotiating table, that's where James being an attorney comes in very handy because now not only do you have leverage to negotiate a better deal, but even if you know a lot of the law and are familiar with record deals or those types of deals, it only takes one little clause to slip through the cracks that could fuck you. Oops, I only thought I was giving out 10% of my royalties. I didn't know I was giving away 40 over the course of 4 years. First year is only 10. Well, the lawyer, what we do is part of the program. James provides legal oversight as an included cost in the program. A lot of attorneys, even if you go out and find a deal for yourself, you find a show at a venue and you say they give you some contract and then you say, okay, well, before I sign this, I want somebody to tell me if this is legit or not. Even though you went out and got the opportunity and did a lot of the negotiating yourself, to give that to an attorney or a booking agent, they're still going to take 15 or 20%. And we thought that was ridiculous because if you're going out and getting the show and you're using the data that you have to get a show, they didn't do any work other than they look at the contract and they can tell in 5 minutes if it's a standard contract or if it's a bullshit one. But they're going to charge you for an hour or two worth of work and it's going to be $500 or 20%. So part of the program we have is when the program itself can create data and can create leverage, James can come in and help you understand what it is that you're looking at in a contract and help you come to a better understanding of what or what you are not comfortable with. And those are kind of the three phases. So long story short, yes.
So part of the question, though, the whole pitching talent, I hate the idea of pitching talent to a label because you're begging them is what you're doing. If you're begging them, what do you think they're going to offer you? Because it's not going to be good. There's never a time that you can go and beg someone for something and they're going to give you the best deal they can or listen to you at all. It's similar to what Ellie always says, is you're much better going to someone and going, look at all my fans, let me play a show here, than you are to say, here, listen to my song, please let me play. Aren't I good? They don't care if you're good. They care about their money on the other end. And a label cares about money. The only time they're going to give you a deal is if they can make money off of you. So pitching to labels is a waste of time. And if you're paying someone to do it, you're wasting your own money. Because most likely, they're not even going to do it. They're just going to claim they did and say, sorry, they didn't want you. let the labels come to you. When they come to you, that's when you will be in the driver's seat in terms of what you can get for a deal.
Yeah, that's a great point. Right. If you have to pitch, it's like going to Shark Tank. Actually, that's a good way of looking at it. If you're going to pitch yourself to a label, even if that's what it comes down to, and it's, hey, look, here's what I got. If all you have is a song to play them, they might think you're the most talented person that they've ever seen. But talent alone isn't what gets people record deals. All the time, how many artists do you see that are mainstream that have like a 5 out of 10 talent, but an 8 out of 10 fan base? Talent alone doesn't work anymore. It's not 1993. There isn't an A&R going to an open mic in some random bar in some city to see the unfound talent yet. Like, where's the diamond in the rough? That's not what happened. That's not the music business anymore. What happens now is record labels are not in the business of making something out of nothing. They are in the business of taking something and multiplying it by 10. So you need to show them that you have something, and in their eyes, the something is an audience to sell to. They're not necessarily looking for a talent to sell. They've got plenty of that. But if you have your own audience, now they have more people to sell more shit to.
My favorite is when people go, listen to me, I'm so good. And I go, I don't care if you're good. Because my opinion means nothing. And that's what the labels do too. Their opinion doesn't mean anything. They could think you're horrible. But if people like you, they'll sign you because they can make money off of you.
Yep. And the same vice versa. They may think that you are the most talented musician they have ever heard. But if they don't think that people – that there's a market for it, or that you're marketing yourself over and over again and people just aren't resonating with it, they're not in the business of developing raw talent. They're in the business of maximizing a fan base that is already in place.
People seem to forget too that they think, oh, if I sign a label deal, I'll make it. The numbers are out there, and only like 2% of people who even sign deals become successful in terms of make over $100,000. Most people who sign deals are buried. The labels sign them to keep them away from everyone else. They test the market themselves and find out it's not worth it. Maybe you'll make a little bit of money, but most likely you'll be buried, and that's it. And you'll never be able to release your own music again because the label's just going to bury you. They don't want someone else to have you. If they can't get money off of you and they've lost money, they're just going to sit on you and let you sit there. And there's a bunch of numbers out there. You can pull them up. Successful music business is not signing to a label. It's being able to live off of your music income.
Yep. I like that. And yeah. Speechless for the first time in my life. So in that case, I guess we'll move on to the other question. G's the God says, can we talk about leveraging credit for artists? Then he says, let's talk about leveraging business credit for artists and independent labels as well. Jake. He has a take. Jake, James's take. Jake, do your take.
I'm not even sure what the question is asking. Business credit for artists and independent labels. Like, if you're going to get a business credit line, most likely you have to personally guarantee it unless you have some stream of income. If you're getting a business credit line, you should only be using that on things that are going to bring money back into you. So don't use it to get your Instagram following up. Don't use it to print off stickers and paste them all around the city. Yeah, that may have been a cool thing to do back in the day, but right now no one's out in public because of COVID. Think about ways to use that money to reinvest in yourself and get some money back. So streaming, you get money back directly. You won't get as much money back as you spend, but you do get money back. So it can go back towards paying that credit. Merchandise, you get money back. Usually you make money off of merchandise. Most artists make money off merchandise and shows. So if you can use that business credit to pay for a trip to go do five shows, do that and bring merchandise with you. That's probably the best beginning spot when it comes to business credit. I would not recommend using business credit to buy a feature unless that feature comes with marketing promotion on its own. And then that feature, if you think that feature is going to market it and help you get money back, great. But don't just pay $10,000 for a ripoff, I don't know, 2 Chainz verse that he recorded sometime over a different beat and just sold to you. And it's like, good luck.
Yeah. Actually, that has legit happened to a client of ours. So that example doesn't come out of thin air. That's actually something that I like to touch on, is what James was just saying about using a feature. Now, if you are paying a bunch of money to feature with an established artist, make sure that if you're paying a lot of money, make sure that all you are getting out of this is not just purely a verse. Meaning, it's very much in your interest to offer them more money than they're asking. If they're saying, yeah, okay, I'll do this song with you for $5,000. Okay. If that's all it is going to be, they're going to put their verse on your track and that's it. They're not going to put it on Twitter. They're not going to post about it on Instagram. It's not going to be on their Facebook. To them, it's going to be like it doesn't exist. You really have to ask yourself if that's worth $5,000, because that's 3, 5, 10 grand is like the asking price for, like, you know, an established artist who has some sort of fan base. And if you don't know this person personally, and most of these guys are happy to do a verse with you, but they're not going to go and talk about it during their next blog interview, the next time they're on Shade 4-5, they're not going to be talking about your shit. So what ends up happening is you end up releasing music that happens to be a feature to people who already know you anyway. And then it's just you promoting a song with a feature. Granted, the song might get more clicks purely with the name, but guess who's the one promoting it? You. And if you don't promote it, their name means nothing, because it's not going to magically appear on all of their followers' release radar. That's not how it works. So if you're paying $5,000 for a verse, offer another 1,000 to say, can you post it on Instagram 4 times? Can we do an IG live for 15 minutes the week it comes out? Can we do something? Can you post it on Twitter once? Can you do something? Because if not, I almost guarantee it is not worth it.
And one more thing. Always make sure that if you're the artist you're paying for a feature is signed to a label, that you have clearance to release that song, because that artist can sell you that verse, but that artist is under contract that his verses are owned by the label. And if the label doesn't clear it, you're not going to be allowed to post it. And if you post it, the label is going to come after you. So just get the clearance before you ever send money. Just get it included. Get a contract, really. Get a contract with the clearance. Get a contract saying they're going to do certain marketing steps. Get a contract when you do this.
Yeah. Yeah, have it laid out, especially if you don't have a personal relationship with this person, because you're likely speaking to their manager or their friend, or in like, oh, yeah, just send me $3,000 on PayPal and we'll send you the verse, you know, next week. Just be careful. And if it sounds too good to be true, it is. James, what you got?
And if they're not even going to ask you for the beat or anything, they're just going to record a verse and you place it on a beat, don't do it. It's very obvious. It's often they come up to us, people come up to us like, I got this verse. And it has nothing to do with their song. That you kind of have to mix and master it in and try to like pretend. It's not worth it. You look bad. You look desperate.
And especially, it's one thing if you have a $30,000 total budget to market the hell out of your album and you're going to spend $5,000 or $6,000 on a feature and they're going to help you market it. That's one thing. But if you have $7,000 to market your whole album and 5,000 of it are going to a feature who's not going to help you, your money is better spent elsewhere. And the thing is if you spend that money on yourself and investing a few tunes that are already doing well or you might already have on Spotify, if you build up a platform of your own, people who are in your platform or a little bit above you perhaps now see value. It's the same kind of thing that we were talking about earlier with leverage. If I am an artist and I have a big following in Philadelphia and I find another artist who has a similar following in New York City, well, instead of paying him $2,500 to do a feature, I can say, look, you've got 20,000 fans in New York. I've got 20,000 in Philadelphia. Let's do a song together. And like we each benefit. But if I have 1,100 monthly listeners and I go to the guy who's got 40,000 monthly listeners in New York City and I say, hey, man, can we team up? He's going to be like, I guess, yeah, your music sounds good, but I'm not getting anything out of this. So I want money, which is fair. If some account comes to us and says, will you post my shit? I have 117 followers. I'm going to be like, sorry, man, what do I get out of it? Because if I start doing it for one person, everyone's going to come up here and want something for free.
I think a feature may be the only time I ever say it might be smart to give away a split instead of money up front. The reasoning behind this is if your feature artist is willing to take 20%, that means they believe in the song and they're going to do something to make sure they get their money. And they're going to help you promote it. If they just want their $500 or $5,000 and they're going to disappear, they think they don't take you seriously and they don't think they can make their money back by just the promotion. So that's something to keep in mind is if you're negotiating with a feature artist, try to get – maybe don't try to get a split, but see if they'd be open to it. If they're open to a split, it kind of gives you an idea if they think you're serious or not and if they think you'll make money from the song.
Yep. And one of the things, though, that kind of does leave the door open for someone to be like, I guess if they're not, if they're going to do the verse for free and take a percentage, that means they'll probably promote it.
Yeah. So I'm not saying for free either. But if they want $5,000 up front and you can negotiate $2,000 plus 20%.
There we go.
That's telling you that they think 20% is worth $3,000. Suddenly you're going, oh, so I should be able to make $10,000 total. I can't do math. Whatever the hell that would be. That's telling you what your value is. But if they're not interested in that at all and they just want money up front, they're not going to help you promote it and they don't care about your music. They don't think you're that good. They're just going to take the money. They're going to run away and disappear. A good label, a good artist would never do that. A label would want to make money long term.
Yeah.
If they think they can.
Right. And they might not necessarily like be there trying to take advantage of you or try to like scam you. But what it comes down to is them promoting your record isn't worth their time or money. So you need to make it worth their time or money because they have their own music to promote. And I'm sure if they're a big established artist, they have 20 people just like you asking for features, and they're probably trying to get features with artists bigger than them. So you need to make their effort and their energy worth it. And if it's just, hey, do me a favor, man, like I'm good. I think you're great too. Help me out. Like they're going to want money or they're not going to do it, frankly. So if you're spending $5,000 on a featured artist, make sure that you have some sort of discussion about how they're going to market it and say that I'm willing to give you 80% of the royalties if you're going to market the hell out of it to your 20 million followers, or maybe that's probably an extreme example. But if you're at an independent level and somebody that big is willing to do it, it might be worth it for one song. Maybe not, but it all depends. If they're going to give you nothing, it's definitely not worth $5,000.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure you remember when Drake opened for Lil Baby on a song. like when before Lil Baby was Lil Baby. I have a feeling that's the type of deal that they made there because it's Drake. Drake's worth more money than it doesn't matter. If he's on a song, the song's gonna be a hit. And Drake, Lil Baby was coming up, his label wanted to be big. I don't even know if it's the same label. But the best way to do that was get Drake to open for him. And I have almost no doubt in my mind, knowing Drake's on the song, and if it blows up, they can make more money off royalties than they will any payment that Lil Baby gives him up front.
Yep, that's an example like that is probably exactly what happened. But here, we got a great question from Tyrone. He says, how possible is it to land in hot water pushing songs that have leased beats as opposed to songs with exclusive rights when that song becomes hot?
So if you have a leased beat, you're not able to put it on like YouTube and stuff like that, depending on what the lease is. Exclusive rights and lease beats, most likely you're still paying the producer the same amount of money. You're just not able to stop other people from using that beat. So it's not hot water as much as you have to be aware of what you owe that producer. Do not wait to start paying that producer. Just pay him. If you owe him money at 100,000 streams, him or her money at 100,000 streams, make sure you start paying them 100,000 streams. Because if you wait till a million streams, it's going to be too late. Exclusive beats are nice because you can stop other people from using the beat. And then that way, if your song does become famous, you don't have someone else using the beat without your permission. But it's not hot water as much per se. I always recommend getting exclusive beats, just buy them outright. But then again, even if you buy exclusive beats, you can't go backwards and take the lease away from people who bought it before you. Mm-hmm. So if you're buying beats that have been publicly sold, it's going to be a lot harder for you to manage who bought that beat before you. So if you can buy exclusive beat, if you know someone, maybe you use the same person every time you go online and buy beats, try to get in communication with them outside of that marketplace and have them make the beat for you outside of there and never sell it openly. And that's the only way you can really make sure you're the only person using that beat.
Yep. I think really what it's going to come down, like you're going to owe the producer the amount of money you owe them. I think at the basic levels of beat leases is say like a basic lease, you might get the first 50,000 streams like for free. And then after 50,000 streams, that's when you pay them half. Maybe the unlimited leases you get up to after 100,000 streams is when you start paying them. So that might be a part of your lease as well. But like James said, the easy way is to just set it up at the beginning. Like you have to give them 50% unless you have some sort of custom deal. If you're just getting it off BeatStars or something, like the standard is pretty much 50%. And there's really nothing you can do about it. So...
yeah, the biggest way you can get in trouble off a lease beat compared to an exclusive beat is putting it on YouTube and monetizing it, because you don't have the rights to do that 99% of the time on a lease beat. That and not paying the producer. Those are the two ways you have to be careful. Unless your lease, people also have to remember, I can name my lease whatever I want, but the terms are what matters the most. So I can say it's an exclusive lease. And it doesn't have to be an exclusive lease if the terms don't say it's an exclusive lease. So don't just read the title and go, yep, it's exclusive, and sign off. Mm. It doesn't matter what the title is. The title is going to be defined in the lease. So read the lease to figure out what it is.
Yep. Great point. Yep. Don't just blatantly or ignorantly sign shit. Look it over. All right. So running out of time. Now we got a new fancy software. If we wanted, we could sit here and talk for 8 fucking hours. So good luck if I ever make it that long to anyone whose ears can still take it. But we do offer discounts for folks who come in and view these live streams. We really enjoy doing Q&As. And frankly, it's a great opportunity for us to make some content. So thanks for coming and asking us your questions. Today's discount, because it's the 27th and... I couldn't think of a discount, so I called it Mike. I called it Trout because Mike Trout is number 27, and why not? I guess I miss baseball. So today, if you add a 1 month program, what we're going to do is we're going to put one song in front of 40,000 people in 4 to 6 playlists for 30 days. It's a great way to get your song initiated and to start to see what kind of data comes in and to see if this song is perhaps worth promoting further. What it does is 3 weeks into the program, you get a consultation with me and James, if you want it. And we go over this data with you, and instead of kind of these broad examples where we go over here and, you know, the podcast or webinar or whatever, we really apply it to directly your specific data and what your goals are with it. So tonight's discount, what we're going to do is if you buy the 1 month program, we're going to give you a 2 week program for a second song for free that we can do at the same time. This way you'll save $175. You'll get two songs going. You'll be in front of about 60,000-ish, 65,000-ish people in a total of 7 to 11 playlists total, something like that, if my math is correct. So save $175, get a free 2 week program, use coupon code Trout, add a 1 month program to your cart, fill out the form, add a 2 week program, use the coupon code Trout, save $175, get on the phone with me and my bald friend James. And, yeah, it's a great way to get started.
And?
Oh, that's right. Yes, and we're only doing – last time we've been doing it, we know we have people from all over the world now. So we've changed the time. And instead of doing a time deadline, all we're doing is the first 15 people – or 10. 10. The first 10 people to use this will get it, period.
We've got 10 spots. Both songs have to be out now.
Yes.
This is important. That's the only way we can do this. We can't afford to do this otherwise. So if both songs are not out now, we will not take it. First 10 people. So Trout works for the next 10 people that order. And we've got 10 more minutes, Elliot. Go ahead.
10 more minutes. You posted something interesting today about what a trademark is meant to do. Now, let me preface this. We get a lot of people because the main thing, I think one of the main things that makes us different compared to a lot of other music promotional companies is we have an attorney that you're able to get in the ear of and get some direct answers on things that are might be hard to navigate otherwise. Something that people come to us and ask all the time is if they need to copyright their music or their name, or if they need to trademark their music or their name.
Or patent.
Or, yeah, patent. Yeah, right. So, James, can you just give us the rundown of generally what forms, what patents do people in music need to get, if any?
Yeah. So I'll give you just a rundown of IP, intellectual property in general. Music, your lyrics are artistic works. They are usually, they are copyrighted automatically when they're fixed. So you do not have to go get a copyright from the US government unless you're planning on suing someone or sending a takedown notice to someone. And that's when you prove you have the copyright. But it's automatically copyrighted, thanks to US law, the moment it is fixed. That means recorded, written down, something. A tweet is a copyrighted item. So if you're copying someone else's tweet and retweeting it, you are violating their copyright unless you give them credit. So that is copyright. Now, a patent is an invention. As a musician, unless you are making a new invention, you will never need a patent. That is not for music. That is not for your artist name. A trademark is used to signify the source of an item. So an artist name is usually trademarked. A logo is usually trademarked. those signify where they came from. And it's made to protect consumers so that consumers are not confused as to where this came from, whose music this is. If there's 15 biggies, consumers would be confused which biggies is what, biggie is what. And that's why a trademark exists. So generally, the rule of thumb is trademark your name, trademark your logo, copyright your music, which it's already copyrighted, but copyright if you want to threaten someone or get their music taken down. Don't worry about a patent. And your trade secret, which is nothing you tell the government, it's something you keep secret so no one knows, is how you record, is the best way to think about it. Those are the four IP laws, really, the four types of intellectual property. So you can trademark your name. You should probably trademark your name, your logo, and then you can copyright your music. You're not going to patent either of those. Invention, patent, think like medicine. Or think Arena Football patented their football field because it was different. It was an invention. It was a new type of football. They didn't patent the logo. The logo was trademarked.
Yep.
Yep. You know. Go ahead, Elliot.
Well, just great. I've heard this before. But yeah, like that sums it up. Like that's all what you need to know. Okay, cool. So we've got a few extra questions here about the discount we're running. There some people asking, does the song have to be a new release? No, it does not have to be brand new. The song can still resonate with both new listeners and the Spotify algorithm. It doesn't need to be a new song in order to do so. It's actually probably even more beneficial if there's some data behind the song already. If you know generally which songs are your most popular songs, if Spotify is telling you, hey, song number 1 and 2 are your most popular songs, rely on the tools. The name of the game is getting Spotify to spread your music for you. So if it's telling you what your 2 most popular songs are, use those. Because those popular songs are not just a straight up leaderboard of streams. If you take a look, your most popular or second or third most popular songs will have less streams than another one, but it's deemed more popular. Now, I can't tell you why they do it that way, but they do it that way. And if the name of the game is getting Spotify to spread your music for you, if they're telling you that your song, number 1 and 2, are your most popular songs, then those are the 2 that you should be focusing on for now.
It's all about retention rates. And your Spotify wants to learn about your retention rates. If Spotify has your top 5 songs in that order, it's because they deem number 1 to keep listeners happy the most. And then number 2 is number 2, 3, 4, 5. The goal of our program is to not find you new fans as much as it is to get Spotify to learn who likes you so that you get promoted by Spotify and Discover Weekly Release Radar and gets your music in front of new people who are likely to be fans. Spotify knows who your fans will be. We don't. We know the genre. We know generally who might like your music. Spotify knows the listening habit of these people. And what they're doing is putting your music in front of people who have listening habits that should like your music. They're not just guessing. And their goal is to get your music in front of people that makes those people happy. They want to keep their listeners happy.
Yep. What we want to do is find a target audience that you and your music and your brand over time create fans out. If we can potentially create a pool of people and add a demographic of people that might be 1 million. 1 million people fit the description of people who are similar listeners to your fan base. If you can churn that out and over time you can create 250,000 fans out of that million and you bat 25%, that would be huge. But it takes time and re-exposure. Nobody finds a brand new artist, a brand new song, hears a song once or twice, and is immediately a fan. There's a huge difference of being aware of a song and even liking it a lot and being a fan of that person. And there's also a big difference between being a fan of a song and a fan of an artist. I am a fan of that Roxanne song. I like that song, but we use this example all the time, and I still don't know the fucking guy's name because I'm a fan of the song, or I'm aware of the song. I'm not a fan of him. I haven't heard 10 of the songs I like. I haven't heard any other. I just know the song and I like the song, but it doesn't make me a fan of him. And I probably haven't saved it to my Spotify either because I know where to find it.
His first name's Arizona.
Arizona. I think of Arizona Rob, but I don't know if that's like from a cartoon or just like an inside joke from high school. I just know Arizona Rob is a thing. At least to me. I don't know if it is to anybody else. But yeah. So there's a huge difference between being aware of somebody and aware of a song and being a fan of that artist. So our job is to help you, because right now you might be targeting the United States, fans of hip hop, anyone who's alive in the United States who might be a fan of hip hop. That is not a target audience as much as I'm trying to shoot a rocket and I'm trying to get it somewhere on Mars. No, like, that's way too broad. That's not a target. If we can start to learn that your target are people in their mid-20s in the Southwest who like ASAP Rocky and Pusha T, even that, instead of saying anyone in the world who's a fan of hip-hop, now we know, well, generally people in these cities, Phoenix, I don't know the cities out there, Vegas.
You don't know any other cities.
The Southwest. What is the Southwest? Tulsa? Oklahoma City? That's not the Southwest. That's the Central still. So, okay. You get the idea.
LA.
Is that Southwest? Considered? I guess, yeah. Okay, yeah. To me, that was just West. Okay. But you get the idea. So now instead of targeting the world, anyone who's a fan of hip-hop, because hip-hop could be Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff, and it could be Tech N9ne, right? But does a Will Smith fan technically like, you know, do they like the same music as a Tech N9ne fan? Most likely no. So if we can start to figure out that your audience are people in the Southwest in the mid-20s who like ASAP Rocky and Pusha T, that is something that you can start building off of. And your target audience is very much a moving target, and it's not set in stone that your fans are in Phoenix. But right now, you're getting some buzz in Phoenix, and people in Phoenix are playing your song, and they seem to be 20, and they're also listening to Pusha T. Well, maybe we should target other people that kind of look like that. And the more that you start to figure out generally what type of listener fits your target audience, the more Spotify is learning who fits your target audience. And if it starts to learn that people in their mid-20s in the Southwest who like Pusha T and ASAP Rocky like your music, well, people that fit that description are going to be targeted on things like Discover Weekly, Release Radar, Daily Mix. The people that fit that description are going to be targeted with your music because Spotify will have enough data to deem your song a value add for these types of listeners. And that's the job. It's your job to make a fan out of them. It's our job to help point you in the direction of the group of people that you can over time make fans out of. People aren't fans in a day or a week or a month even. James, his video was lagging behind a little bit and he just nodded a bunch. So it looked like he nodded like 19 times in a row real quick. Okay, so thank you everybody for joining us. This is the Business of Music podcast. I'll see if there's any more questions here. Find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, leave a review and share it with a musician that might benefit from some of the stuff we talked about today. And we do these every Wednesday. It's a great chance for us to connect with folks who might be interested in asking us specific questions. Join us next week as we do the Business of Music podcast again, and we'll be having some other sort of discount. And James, I'll leave you with the last word.
Oh, I thought you had a question. You want to have any more questions?
Oh, okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Oh, here's a good question. Are these lives posted somewhere for us to go back and listen to again? Yes, these will be posted. The audio will be made into a podcast on Spotify and Apple and wherever you listen to podcasts. The video will be available on Facebook as well as YouTube. And I'm sure we'll be cutting it up and making certain chunks of it into Instagram content as well. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yep, this is what Christopher says. He says, they usually post parts on IG from what I've seen. Don't know if the full live version is available online. Yes, it is. So check it out on YouTube. The last one we did last week is available on there. We had a great conversation. Some of the same topics, but different angles and different questions. So thank you all for joining us. Now I'll leave James with the last word.
Hey, thanks everyone. Discount code is live. I think we have, what, eight left? Eight left. That's,
yep.
So eight more people, buy 1 month, get 2 week free. Both songs have to be out now. We can get those going ASAP and start testing some data and get you on a phone call with us in about 3 weeks.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Music podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. For more content like this on how to help yourself as an independent artist, join us at denovoagency.com and check out a lot of our free resources. You can join us each Wednesday night on Facebook and YouTube Live, where we do webinars like this to answer your questions in real time. So if you have questions about how to grow your music business, join us Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern.